Chapter 17, About the Secret of the Little Stones. "Get up, you scoundrels! Breakfast is ready!" cried Good Fortune, who had climbed up on the truck. "Oh, our revered elder!" said Big Tiger, rubbing his eyes. "You needn't pretend to me," remarked Good Fortune. "A man learns many things in his sleep. For instance, there are boys who should sleep at night, but they run around making trouble. Hailstone is right mad over it. He says one of you stamped on his face and the other trampled in his ribs. When he wanted to punish you, you had disappeared." "We can't disappear like smoke," Christian pointed out. "We're not invisible like the nine-tailed fox," said Big Tiger ambiguously. "Beware of Hailstone. He wants to spank you," warned Good Fortune. "We beg the protection of our revered elder," pleaded Big Tiger. "We are very innocent," added Christian. Good Fortune laughed. "I know that," he said. "Are you ready?" Christian and Big Tiger walked along behind Good Fortune to the kitchen. When Good Fortune opened the door, he was hit in the face by a cloud of steam and smoke. A sickly fire was flickering in the bricked-up fireplace, which was streaming smoke from every crack. "The sun is shining on the hearth," declared Hailstone, raking out the cinders. "It's shining into your face," cried Good Fortune. He pushed the door open, and when the smoke had cleared a bit, they could see a row of black saucepans hanging on the wall. Under them stood a black table on the firmly trodden clay floor. Greencoat was sitting on a bench beside it, with a big dish of rice in front of him. "Put the dish on the table," said Good Fortune. "We want to eat, too." "Certainly," growled Greencoat, and went on chewing. "I don't grudge it to you. Fill your bellies."
"Good morning, Mr. Greencoat," said Christian.
"I wish you rest and comfort," said Big Tiger politely. Greencoat made no reply. He put the dish on the table and shouted, "Hailstone, bring dishes. The young gentlemen want to eat. Now set to," he continued, laughing. "As I said before, fill your bellies full. We've still got something to eat today. Tomorrow we shall be in the desert. The sea of sand is big, gentlemen. Eat so you don't fall off the truck. Ha, ha, ha." Big Tiger and Christian felt frightened hearing him talk that way, but they had resolved to be brave. All the same, Christian turned pale. Big Tiger noticed this, but tried to be unconcerned. "We'll eat because we're hungry," he said casually. "Of course," Greencoat nodded eagerly, turning round to Hailstone. "You simpleton," he scolded. "You wanted to set us down to a breakfast of tea and millet, just as if we were camel drivers." "Rice is a costly food," Hailstone pointed out. "Not for people of our kind," said Greencoat insolently. "Where are the new-laid eggs?"
"But the gentleman didn't order any."
"Eggs are a necessary part of breakfast. Be off, and don't come back without half a dozen." Hailstone was astonished, but there was no help for it. Good Fortune was astonished, too, but as it was none of his business, he sat down to the table, and they all ate the good rice. When Hailstone brought the eggs, there were only 5 instead of 6. Then, suddenly, Greencoat decided he didn't want any, and Good Fortune swore that 1 was quite enough for him. So Christian and Big Tiger had 2 eggs each.
"I seem to hear you shouting in the night," said Good Fortune to Hailstone. "Isn't that so?"
"I remember that, too," remarked Greencoat. "You bellowed like a dragon in the dark. I believe you woke me up."
Hailstone sighed, took the poker, and stirred the fire. "It's better to be silent," he said at last, "lest I bring shame on anyone."
"Speak up," cried Greencoat, "and tell us why you frighten your guests with your yells when they want to sleep."
Hailstone pretended to be scarcely able to remember. "It happened," he drawled, "when I heard that Doggalon was leaving. I cried out with fright, thinking of your excellency's loss, and of the camels which by right belong to you."
"It would have been better if you'd awakened me," declared Greencoat.
He had finished eating and was sitting playing idly with some little stones or marbles in his pocket, and looking triumphantly at Good Fortune, who was eating heartily and was in just as good a humor as he.
"How could I have awakened you?" asked Hailstone plaintively. "I got such a fright that I fell down flat like a bottle gourd. As I lay like a dying man, someone came and stamped on my face and trod my ribs into many pieces."
"We beg for forgiveness," said Christian quietly, continuing to eat heartily. Big Tiger laid down his chopsticks, stood up, and bowed. "It happened through unintentional haste," he said. "We beg for leniency." At that moment, one of the little stones with which Greencoat was playing fell, and Big Tiger quickly put his foot on it.
"You see, Hailstone, these boys are polite people," said Good Fortune. "How can they help it if you fall over and your body lies about in the dark? It's easy to stumble over something like that."
"Respect for elders is disappearing," replied Hailstone. "That's all I have to say."
When they had all finished, Good Fortune asked for hot water. Christian stood up quickly to help him to carry it, and Big Tiger, in his haste, let his chopsticks fall. When bending down to pick them up, he reached for the little stone under his foot. It was no stone, however, but a cylindrical thing made of brass with a rounded point. Big Tiger hid it away.
"What's the name of the place we're going to today?" asked Christian.
"It's not called anything," replied Good Fortune. "We just go on until sundown and no longer."
"But there are places which have names, and wells which are not just called wells, and perhaps there are mountains which are not just called mountains."
"Yes, there are lots of them," said Good Fortune, "but I only remember the names when I see where I am. There's a well called Amun Osu, but we shan't see it because we turn off before it. And then there's the Bayan Obo, which we shall see because it's on a mountain."
And a note tells us Obo, a shrine erected in the open by Tibetans or Mongols.
"But for the Bayan Obo, it's better not to speak of it, or the spokes will fall from the wheels, or something else will happen. But why are you asking?"
"Because I have a map," Christian confessed. "The general gave me one as a present."
"Maps are no good," asserted Good Fortune. "You'd best throw it away. You look for a well, for instance, and there it is in big letters on the paper. But you don't find the well. It no longer exists, because it is filled up with sand. There you are in the desert with no water, all because of the map, which was no good. If you see on the map, encampment of a Mongol prince, he's moved away by the time you get there."
"But the mountains don't change," Christian objected.
"The mountains collapse and the hills are easily moved. These Mongol magicians do that every day at breakfast. You must be very careful."
"Greencoat has also told us we must be very careful," Big Tiger interjected coolly, "or we may fall off the truck."
"Greencoat is an ass," said Good Fortune, startled. "So long as I'm driving, you need have no fear. I drive carefully, and no one can fall off."
He got into the driver's cab and sounded the horn. Immediately, Greencoat came running. Good Fortune paid Hailstone for the night's lodging and then drove out into the sunny winter landscape. Christian and Big Tiger had settled down comfortably. They took off their shoes, stuck their feet into the sleeping bags, and sat in their fur coats, their backs against the drums. Big Tiger put his hand in his pocket and took out the thing which Greencoat had lost.
"What's this?" he asked casually.
"A cartridge!" cried Christian. "A real cartridge! Where did you get it?"
"It was lying under the table," Big Tiger reported, "and Greencoat lost it. He must have a lot more, because he was playing with them, and he told how it had all happened." Christian took the cartridge in his hand and said it belonged to a pistol. "I'm quite sure of that," he said. "I saw cartridges once in my father's drawer, and he caught me. I wanted to know if one would be missed if it disappeared. There were 24 of them, but afterwards they were gone, and I don't know where my father put them. Those are not things for boys," he said. Big Tiger said that that was the way fathers talked, and grown-ups would put on great airs if they had cartridges, but soldiers didn't. They were so used to them, they treated them quite casually.
"I have it," he cried suddenly. "Oh, Kwee-chan, I've discovered a secret."
"Tell it to me," asked Christian.
"You must know it already," Big Tiger whispered.
"When we were sitting with Batur under the Kong, waiting for something to happen, and it was so frightfully silent, didn't you hear something? I mean, just a tiny little sound?"
"Yes, like fingers groping, or a mouse scratching," cried Christian.
"Well, that was Greencoat stealing the cartridges out of Good Fortune's holster. That was the noise like a mouse, and he was very pleased with himself afterwards because he thought now Good Fortune could do nothing to him if they quarreled."
"It can't be helped," said Christian. "You're right."
Suddenly the truck went more slowly, and Christian heard Good Fortune opening the window and crying, "Here!" Big Tiger, who had fallen asleep, brightened up again, and they both saw wheel tracks which branched off southward, and near them were many hoof prints of camels and some of horses.
"There go my 200 bots, said Good Fortune.
"Drive on," cried Greencoat irritably. "Nothing can be done."
Good Fortune shut the window and accelerated.
"Now they're quarreling again," said Christian.
But Big Tiger was in no mood for talking. He pulled off his coat and slipped into his sleeping bag. Christian did the same, and in a few minutes both were fast asleep. An hour passed by, and another, and Good Fortune continued to drive northward. The last Chinese huts disappeared in a valley behind some steep slopes of crumbling earth. Greencoat had wished Good Fortune to stop, for he didn't feel well. He wanted to drink a whiskey, he said, while there was still one to be had. But Good Fortune said he felt even worse, because he had not got his payment on account. At this, Greencoat was silent, and Good Fortune drove past the huts, honking furiously. A few ragged children ran out screeching. The grown-ups stood on their doorsteps, open-mouthed, and the dogs bristled and barked from a safe distance. Another hour passed. Then there were no more valleys, only the flat steppe with its yellow grass of last year. The snow was melting under the rising sun, and a pair of eagles were hovering overhead. Good Fortune became cheerful in spite of Greencoat, who was glumly indifferent to the beauty of God's good morning. When the first Mongol yurt appeared, Good Fortune could not resist honking loudly, but no one emerged. The yurts were far away, and the horses which stood beside them turned their heads and swished their tails. An automobile attracted no particular attention here. The indicators showed that the car had covered almost 100 miles since they had left the inn. When a low ridge of hills appeared in the west, Good Fortune began to take note of every height until they reached an artificially terraced mound of stone. Here he turned off from the telegraph lines and drove into the open steppe. "Why are you not driving to Amun Osu?" asked Greencoat. "The cart road goes by there." "I'm not a caravan," answered Good Fortune haughtily. "I'm an automobile. Nevertheless, you should keep to safe roads." "I keep to what I know," retorted Good Fortune, pointing to the hill with the mound of stones. "Don't you see the oboe?" "I see the oboe, but I don't know it." "You've a lot to learn yet," said Good Fortune. "The best thing you can do is to hold your tongue, for I must bear due west now, and it's no easy matter."